The U.S. silence on Bahrain. Not to mention Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya's silence. Protesters in Egypt burned the Israeli flag. In Syria, armed gangs use live fire on neighborhoods. In Libya, the Misrata massacre, a divided NATO and Obama.
And you now have a stalemate on the ground militarily.
And finally, protests in Yemen continue.
That's right. It has become clear that as far as Al Jazeera is concerned, Bahrain does not exist. The station has even avoided bringing in guests or critics on the subject, unlike their nonstop live coverage of the Egyptian revolution. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tafawi. We'll review the Arab uprisings, including Bahrain's revolution. We'll also look at reports of the use of depleted uranium in the Libya war. All coming up in this week's Reality Check. As you're familiar by now, Press TV has covered all of the Arab uprisings, and that has included Saudi Arabia, who as of late appears to have taken matters into its own hands, such as the case in Bahrain. But what about the Saudi kingdom itself?
لا شيء في الدنيا يعدل حرية الإنسان. يعرف هذا من حالت القضبان الحديدية بينه وبين النهار وقضت أن يكون حبيس العتمة دون حكم أو إدانة أو حتى زمن معلوم، لا لشيء سوى اقترافه جريمة رأي مختلف ينشد به الصلاح، أو شباب قبض عليهم بشبهة بسيطة كلفتهم البقاء معزولين عن ضوء الشمس سنين طويلة.
منذ ما يقرب من 4 سنوات تقريبا فوجئت كما فوجئ الكثيرون بإلقاء القبض على بعض الإخوة الكرام الذين كنا ولازلنا نأمل أن تستفيد منهم هذه البلاد الطيبة الطاهرة.
كان هنا وقد تم انتزاعه من بيننا. ليس من أمر أقسى على المرء مثل فراق أبيه، وليس من صورة تحكي هذا المشهد مثل الدموع الحبيسة في صدر هذه الفتاة.
والله غيابه يعني ترك فراغ كبير جدا في حياتي، ما فيش أي إنسان يقدر يملأه، لأنه هو كان ما هو بس أب، كان يعني مرشد روحي لي. يعني
بين هرم جاوز 70 ورجل مقتبل الشباب ترتسم خارطة سوداء للمعتقلين السعوديين. ألف رأي ورأي اتخذت لها موقعا في السجن. ساد صوت هلع المداهمات الليلية وضاع صوت الحوار. ثمة من لا يريد أن يسمع شيئا، وثمة مصلحون يحبون هذا الوطن ولا يريدون السكوت عن الأخطاء.
بابا ما جاء البيت 4 سنوات، بابا ما يعرف البيت.
إذا ما استمرت السلطات والمسؤولين في التمسك بهذه اللائحة والتمسك بما فيها من تهم، أرجو أن يعيدوا النظر في ذلك.
يمكن للمربوحيات والمدافع والرشاشات والعصي أن تخمد كل الأصوات الرافضة، كما يمكن للسجون الكبيرة أن تستوعب الآلاف من أجساد المختلفين والناقمين على الأوضاع الخاطئة، لكنها في الوقت ذاته تزرع غضبا عارما في في نفس كل طفلة وأم وزوجة، وفي روح كل أب وأخ وصديق، وهو غضب لا يهدأ يوما، وبؤرة توتر ستبقى محفورة في الوجدان سنين طويلة.
يا رب يا رب يا رب.
On to Bahrain. This past week, Iran's foreign minister, Dr. Ali Akbar Salehi, called on the UN to stop Bahrain, backed by Saudi forces, from massacring protesters. Here's a look at some of the reasons why Iran has taken notice, unlike other countries who have remained muted on this tiny Persian Gulf island.
That the people in Bahrain think that the U.S. is, in one way or another, directly complicit in what's happening in Bahrain.
The importance of embracing tolerance and universal human rights in all of our communities.
I was hoping that the United States would take a stronger stand when it comes to Bahrain, and I've been trying to speak to the Department of State and urge them to issue a ban on arms to the GCC countries who have been using these arms against peaceful civilians. My father and my two brother-in-laws and my uncle have all gone missing. We don't know where they are, and it's been several days, and we're afraid for their lives. Already four people have died, and their bodies have showed up with torture marks on them.
America is viewed negatively for having double behavioral standards for itself and other countries, especially when it comes to human rights issues.
I think the double standard issue has been one of the sorest points, particularly on values.
The protesters denounced the torture of jailed demonstrators. Several detainees have died under interrogation. The daughter of prominent human rights activist Abdul Hadi Al-Khawaja recalls how the regime forces attacked their house to capture her father.
They came in without prior warning. They broke down the building door, and they broke down our apartment door and straightaway attacked my father without giving him a chance to speak and without giving any reason for his arrest.
The footage shows a mosque in Kawara outside the capital, Manama. The mosque was destroyed by the Saudi and Bahraini forces. Two copies of the Holy Quran were burned during the raid on the mosque. This footage shows a soldier tearing down what appears to be a billboard bearing holy Islamic names.
Let's go to April 11th, 2 days after that, Saudi-backed forces arresting senior Bahraini clerics. And as I said, and as Mr. Nabil Rajab was telling us, a lot of people arrested since then, clerics, teachers and human rights activists. The day after that, more protesters tortured to death in police custody. People were referring to signs on the bodies of those who'd been killed, signs of torture, they said, while they were being held by security forces. On April 13th, anti-regime protests were raging on as people are still mourning another victim of police brutality. Human Rights Watch calls for an investigation into the recent killings of protesters. A brief look at the timeline of events taking place there in Bahrain as a result of the protest that started in mid-February. Violence still continuing, crisis still continuing there.
The government trying their best to cover their crimes. From one side, they try to threaten the families of those people getting killed not to take pictures. From the other side, they try to threaten human rights activists like myself, being referred to a military court. But it is now too late and it is too difficult because the crime is so much, it cannot be covered.
The importance of embracing tolerance and universal human rights in all of our communities.
You just witnessed some of the human rights abuses, including torture, that took place. And that's only in 1 week, all of which could not be covered in this program. So what does the EU do on the matter? Not much. But very proactive on Iran, slapping sanctions on 32 firms, a move welcomed by the United States, a move best described by Shibli Talhami from the Brookings Institute, who said,
I think the double standard issue has been one of the sorest points, particularly on values.
The names of well-known Iranian officials, judges, and police commanders appear on a list of 32 people the European Union blames for what it calls human rights abuses. The 27-nation bloc has imposed sanctions on them, including asset freezes and travel restrictions.
We have agreed sanctions, restrictive measures on Iran because of the appalling human rights record of Iran. And the European Union is agreeing today restrictive measures on 32 individuals in Iran we believe are responsible and instrumental in those policies.
The move was welcomed by the U.S., saying that it will continue to work closely with the EU to ensure that the cause of human rights remains at the forefront of their efforts.
The silence of the United States and the European Union about what's happening in the Middle East, particularly in Bahrain and Yemen, raises many questions. For example, is it that some nations simply don't qualify? Or is human rights just a little bit more than words on a page that can be used to vilify certain countries? Gisum Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
Syria, no problem. Extended coverage, videos, analysts included. Same for Yemen. And of course, Libya, their title, The Battle for Libya. But on Bahrain, Saudi-owned Al Jazeera has been silent. In one instance, when they covered the Arab uprisings with videos, when it came to Bahrain, the camera shot was a close-up on the anchor without even a picture of Bahrain in the background, unlike Press TV, of course.
I have seen lately in the past days there are some international news agencies are covering now more than before. It's not up to the crime committed, yes, but at least things are getting better, especially with the awareness that you are creating by Press TV and by other TV stations that have been following Bahrain since the beginning.
Sajat from the UK, I hope I pronounced your name right. Once again, my commendations to the staff of Press TV for its excellent coverage of the situation in Bahrain, Yemen, and Egypt. There is at least one global news network which truly attempts to portray the miseries of the voiceless and the hardships of the oppressed. Very nice comments there. And I think it's certainly true that if you look at a lot of the Western media, while some of it was supportive of events in Egypt, you tend to find that in the end, it acts in the interests of power, because after all, it is controlled by the powerful, either privately in the United States. And, you know, this means really that you've got to be careful when it comes to certain stories and where you can go, where you can't go. And that creates a kind of consensus over which stories are important. So Press TV certainly has a different voice and an alternative one, and certainly one which I think people should watch.
All this happens amid the silence of the mainstream Western media, such as BBC and CNN, as well as Arab language channels, Al Jazeera and Saudi Arabia's Al Arabiya. No coverage of the events unfolding in Bahrain.
Has mainstream media become a willing partner in war making? That's one of the questions asked in the documentary The War You Don't See by John Pilger, featured in the program Cinepolitics.
The War You Don't See by veteran filmmaker and war correspondent John Pilger. Pilger asks the uncomfortable question, has the mainstream media become a willing partner in rapacious war making? Pilger's film asks, what is the role of the media in wars? Why do many journalists beat the drums of war regardless of the lies of governments?
These days we have 24-hour news. The sound bites never stop, and the wars never stop. Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine. This film is about the war you don't see. Drawing on my own experience as a war correspondent, it will look mainly at television, concentrating on the most popular channels in America and Britain. This is the Pentagon, which spends almost $1 billion a year just on advertising, recruiting, propaganda, the selling of war.
There are Pentagon contracts with news organizations in terms of how to manipulate the news. There are Pentagon officials involved in press releases that go to the media, in which intelligence is used to manipulate public opinion, which is a violation of the charter of any intelligence organization. Then you have retired generals who serve as press spokesmen for all the networks, and it's never revealed which military industrial firms they work for.
Central to this is the co-opting and spinning of a media regarded as the freest in the world.
Showdown Iraq. If America goes to war, turn to MSNBC and the experts.
Scores of American reporters have now joined U.S. military units in Kuwait as part of the Pentagon's effort to make any war with Iraq what the Pentagon calls a media-friendly campaign.
If we journalists, including myself, had right from the get-go, from the opening pop, had started asking the kind of tough, digging, aggressive questions we should have been asking, and doing our reporting rather than just being kind of stenographers, go to a briefing, have an official say something, print it in the paper next day. If we had done our job, I do think a strong argument can be made that perhaps we would not have gone to war.
How much would you guess U.S. military spending is in 1 year? Maybe I should ask, how do they come up with the money when they're trying to trim their deficit? Maybe the following will shed more light on the subject.
The United States has military bases in some 170 countries around the world. And every year, U.S. military spending is roughly the same as that of the rest of the world put together.
The $61 billion in spending reductions passed by the House months ago is equivalent to 1.6% of total projected federal spending. Americans tighten their belts much more than this every day.
I think Congress needs to fix what they're doing. It's not. I think they can cut the defense bill, not even like that big, just a small little bit, and fund schools. That's how I feel.
The budget debate in the U.S. is threatening to shut down the government. The core argument in President Barack Obama's contested proposal is the budget cuts. That is, how much to slash spending and from which programs. Still, military expenditure has been exempt from the massive budget reductions. The U.S. military spending has actually increased in recent years, despite serious economic challenges facing the country.
I just think that military spending is completely ridiculous. We've got kids who can barely afford to go to school. We've got parents who can barely afford to clothe their children. We have people out here looking for work, scavenging for jobs, people with educations that can only get into gas stations. We need to do something about this, and that starts with reinvesting our money into America and to Americans and to be able to build us up from the ground up.
The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says global spending increased by 1.3% last year. The United States has the biggest military budget in the world. Washington's military spending in 2010 was nearly $700 billion, about six times bigger than that of Beijing.
U.S. takes the lead, then takes the back seat. France and U.K., more alliance cooperation needed. NATO allies reject this, but want more U.S. involvement and to arm or not to arm the opposition. There are lives at stake in Libya. Yet, the mission is in disarray. And while the humanitarian mission is now called the right to protect civilians, reports are emerging of the use of depleted uranium.
While claiming to be in Libya purely for imminent humanitarian concerns, the United States dropped 45 2,000-pound bombs containing depleted uranium in the first 24 hours of the attack. What is depleted uranium, and how does it affect life long after the bombs are gone? Experts have said that the rising cost of this war could easily pass $1 billion. And just what is all this war about anyway?
Depleted uranium is a metal heavier than lead that's being used by the U.S. for all of its munitions now. It's designed to be able to have bombs and missiles penetrate armor, in other words, to go through tanks. But it's an untested weapon, and it's made of depleted uranium, and the half-life for depleted uranium could be hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions of years. So when the war ends, when the bombing stops, the depleted uranium and thousands of pounds of it, tons of it, will remain all over Libya.
Once again, the United States government is involving itself militarily, attacking yet another country. Ask yourself, Which country in the world from its beginnings to the present time has the bloodiest history of genocide, slavery, invasions, and mass destructions, including the use of atomic weapons? Which country imprisons its own people at the highest rate in the world? And of course, you know the answer is the United States.
All right, get ready for a quick review of the Arab uprisings from this past week, starting with Syria, where armed gangs and foreign elements were cited using live fire on civilian houses, as evident from the following clip, followed by events in Yemen, Egypt, and Libya.
بدر حاتم القلم ومحمد أحمد السخني وأنا بترأسه يوم الأحد.
Nearly 3 months after a popular revolution ousted former Egyptian dictator Hosni Mubarak, demonstrations have been underway on a weekly basis. In the most recent rally, thousands of protesters gathered outside the Israeli embassy in Cairo to protest Tel Aviv's deadly attacks and its crippling siege on the Gaza Strip.
To be clear, there can be no solely military solution to the crisis in Libya. NATO welcomes all contributions to the broad international effort to stop the violence against the civilian population.
And you now have a stalemate on the ground militarily. Wait a minute, there were other uprisings taking place, Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Let's check out PressTV.ir and see how they reported on those two countries.
In Saudi Arabia, hundreds of anti-government protesters took to the streets demanding the release of political prisoners and an end to Saudi military presence in Bahrain. In the capital Riyadh, the protesters gathered outside the Interior Ministry and urged Saudi authorities to release what they called forgotten political prisoners. Dozens injured in Jordan protests. Dozens of people were injured in clashes between pro- and anti-government demonstrators in Jordan's northern city of Zarqa. The clashes broke out on Friday after the two sides started hurling stones at each other. Police fired tear gas to disperse the crowds. A spokesman for police said six officers were stabbed and 34 others were injured in the clashes.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this edition of Reality Check. There was so much more that we just couldn't cover due to time restraints. But do check out YouTube. Our address there, Press TV Global News. Your comments, as usual, are always appreciated. You can send them to RealityCheck@PressTV.ir. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Kavit Atwai.